I just don't like these days connecting my wallet to a website. It just feels like you're giving your wallet to somebody.
From 7CTOs, my name is Etienne De Bruin, and you're in the CTO studio.
Yeah, the fact that you hold your, not all, but you hold a lot of value in that wallet, and you're saying, here, somebody, use this.
And then I saw a hack on TikTok the other day where if you open your wallet in one tab, technically it's open in all tabs.
Which browser? I found that to be true.
I can build a wallet from scratch right now. There's open source code and I can compile my own wallet, whether it's in Flutter, on my mobile device, or whatever the case is, or there's the commercially available wallets like the MetaMasks and so forth. And so a lot of wallets for the desktop tend to be Chrome extensions based. So you have essentially what is just a Chrome extension that runs. And so, you know, think of permissions related to Chrome extension and you essentially have all the things that can happen, right? So if you codify your own wallet and you make it so that it has access to things it probably shouldn't have outside of a tab, you could probably pull that off. But it's really dependent on the developer who made it and how they wanted to implement it. Most wallets follow proper security practices though, and they retain their access within the scope of the tab that you're in and that sort of thing. But you know, some people might make stuff that's a little hacky and potentially might get them banned off of the Chrome store at some point in the future.
And this example was a MetaMask example where it wasn't set to be locked. I guess the word is locked by default. The exploit was, and again, I don't know if this is true. This was on TikTok, so who knows? But that you could, in all your tabs, start going to sort of a malicious site that then is able to extract your ETH. Anyways.
I can believe it. I can definitely believe it.
The other thing I saw which bothered me was someone recommended don't do a whole bunch of transactions with the same account in your MetaMask because you leave a trail of your address that people can exploit somehow. Does that sound real?
Not exploit, but people could figure out what you're doing. I mentioned this in a previous conversation that we had where we were talking about the whole identity issue. You know, there are wallets that I have that I'm okay with it being public, and there are wallets that I have that I don't want the public to know about. If I'm transitioning money in and out of the same two wallets constantly, then people can reasonably assume that that is my other wallet and thus can tie that back to me and thus can potentially know what my net worth is and that sort of thing based off of that information. But I wouldn't necessarily see how that could be exploitable.
Okay, so we had a great conversation about DAOs. I think we can have many conversations about DAOs. We can go high level, we can go low level. We have Ken, Frank, and Michael, which is going to bring just delicious new perspectives. We all know what DAOs are now. They are decentralized autonomous organizations that are meant to have a trustless way of members who might not know each other, who probably don't know each other, all participate in a grand cause. Constitution DAO was a great flagship example of what can happen and then what can go down in flames. But let's just open up with a couple thoughts on DAOs. Are you guys excited about it? Have you thought about potential uses? Frank, I know you brought up a great example in our last conversation around conglomeration around open source projects that then has everybody participate in a meaningful monetary way.
So as I've been reading, I've actually been struggling to see how in a company as a CTO, one might use a DAO. In other words, it looks really good for open source. It looks really good for trying to buy a constitution. I did read about that. I thought that was brilliant. And then in a corporation where it's this hierarchical structure, like was talked about in the previous CTO studio, where there's a leadership team and someone or someone, some figurehead or C-suite or someone like curating the vision and making the final decisions in the DAOs as a CTO, why would we give up that control? And why would we unless we're a benefit corp or a nonprofit and we're trying to do a greater good thing, how could we use that as a way to benefit a company? And I haven't found that yet.
Yeah, I think about that. And one of the ideas I had in just reflecting on our conversation yesterday was, what if it's an internal tool to generate some excitement around, you know, in your engineering team? Let's say you have 50 engineers, 10 engineers, 500 engineers, creating guilds or creating some sort of fun way to participate. I think Alex made me aware of was it called Rails Guild yesterday?
Yeah, Rails Guild is, it's kind of like an agency model using the DAO as basically, I guess, the manager of the treasury of the proceeds from that agency. And I forget that there's a like kind of a DAO platform that it's built on, and it has the concept of a rage quit, whereas basically when you do, you basically turn in your share of the treasury in order to pull out those proceeds. But once you do that, I believe you're kind of done there.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. Alex, welcome. It's good to see you again.
Hey guys, hey everybody.
Alex. Yes, hey. So we have Ken and Frank and Michael. So yeah, we were just talking about the Raid Guild thing, Alex. And Ken brought up an interesting point. How are DAOs important to CTOs? And I was inspired by the Raid Guild thing about maybe there can be an internal geek fest around a DAO inside of a company. But I know that's not what you meant, Ken, but potentially, I don't see myself waltzing into the C-suite and now promoting our company to have some sort of DAO situation. Maybe there's a way to build communities inside of your user base, but that all seems a little far-fetched to me.
And so I think within an organization, I could see a couple of different ways that it could be used. Like kind of the cutesy way is, I don't know, maybe it's like kind of like a karma system internally. You know, like right now in Slack, you could plus somebody and it adds to some karma system. But what if there was some value beyond just the leaderboard that you could provide and something like that? And another thing is, I mean, I don't know around the legality and all of that, but might be an interesting way to potentially do profit sharing. It could be through a DAO where, you know, by doing the work, you earn the tokens and profit is contributed to that treasury. And as long as you're there, you just can keep accumulating that. And when you leave, or if there's something that you need it for, you can kind of exchange those tokens for the currency that's in there.
Yeah, I tend to see a lot of this stuff in terms of design patterns. Like a DAO, it is just a codified design pattern that implements a voting system and an implementation of something that you vote on and the ability to pull stuff in and out of and that sort of thing. Same thing with like NFT. NFT in my mind is just design pattern within smart contracts that allows you to do X and Y and so forth. And so when you think of it in those terms as design patterns, essentially, yeah, I don't necessarily tend to think of it as how can we do this internally for the company. I tend to think of it as, how do I implement this design pattern on the products that I built, right? And so the products that you're building might be social in nature. They might want to have the ability to allow your users to make decisions in tandem with what you're doing. The ability to be able to produce that social cohesion in a particular product that you put out as a company. Like the DAO isn't going to control your company, right? Like it's not gonna like boot out your CEO and take over as your board of directors. Although there's some like nested DAOs that are looking at conception of the idea of like, you know, the shareholders per se vote on a group of wallets that then vote on big decisions, and that group of officer wallets or whatever the case is can make bigger decisions as a whole. And so you're not voting on the big decisions, you're like a republic style, like you're voting on the wallets that are going to be in that smaller group to make those bigger decisions. So there's stuff like that out there that people are trying to build. But it's not going to take over your company. It's not going to take over how your company operates. So I tend to think of it more as, how do I build this into the products that I'm building? So when you're talking about a voting system and you're talking about people having stake, you know, skin in the game, essentially, in terms of these decisions, because they've put ether, and they've put whatever money that they have, then you can really conceptually think of a product that is very different from what we can build today, right? Like a social product that is very different from what we can experience today.
So here's one thing I learned yesterday. I have this friend who works at Olympus DAO. Olympus, I don't know, guys, if you've heard of it. The way I call it is like a glorified Ponzi scheme that actually looks a lot more legit. But any currency in that sense is a Ponzi scheme, and you're just trying to make it the most popular currency compared to all the others. And if you become the number one, then you become the reserve currency of the blockchain. Anyway, they provide a whole bunch of financial instruments and so on. And so it says DAO in its name, right? Olympus DAO. It had existed since April, and there's no DAO. Like, there's no actual DAO. There's a wallet, the treasury wallet, that has a multi-sig. So there's something like 7 out of 10 people have to sign to make a transaction out of its wallet. But there's no formal DAO in there, even though there's DAO in the name. And so does a DAO limit the flexibility that you need to have as a company that evolves, the company that just goes from 0 to 1 and tries to find that where's the product market fit, and you know what you are today and what you are in 6 months, 12 months might be completely different things. And it feels like in real world, in many cases, you may not want to restrict yourself to something very specific that is coded to some specific roles. And it looks like an Olympus DAO is a big deal. Like, that's one of the bigger kind of DeFi things that's been going on recently. There's no formula, there's no DAO. And that's kind of interesting. Any polls that they run, they just run on traditional Web2 off-chain instruments. It still verifies that you have the token, but it doesn't necessarily run the poll on chain. It's basically the way for the management group, for leadership, to gather opinions. They don't care if it's, you know, on chain or off chain, and running it off chain is easier. So I think what we're going to be running into is, you know, what there's the philosophically the correct way of doing things in the crypto world and Web3. And then there's the practicality of things, and those things don't always align with each other. And that's an interesting topic to me personally. I've been curious about those kind of things.
So that's an interesting example of how you would use a DAO. And I just went to the page and was looking some stuff up, and I can't tell, you know, whether there's a DAO or not by looking at it yet. But, and you know more about that than I do. But with a DAO, I'm wondering now if it couldn't be used to cause more social acceptance. Whether there's a DAO or not with Olympus, they put it in the name and people get excited and they follow it. Well, what if, I wish I had a better example, but what if you wanted to start a new Facebook, right? Or what if Facebook had been started with a DAO, and then they want to introduce news, and there's an actual DAO behind it, and the membership says, oh yeah, we'd like news. They all vote, whatever. And then they decide, okay, now we're going to start restricting things, or we're going to sell information, or we're going to do all these other things. And then the DAO, like you could not, because it's winner take all, right? You could not start another Facebook and hope to compete with Facebook in terms of as a social network and have billions and billions of users. Like, they've already won that market, right? However, if someone says, okay, they start something called Facebook DAO, okay, they'd have a better name. But then people might jump on that saying, okay, this is our social network and we have the votes. And perhaps that could be a way that you could start a company, make something of value, but the value could help people, you know, going back to the theme of we all want to own our data.
Great example. And I'm going to give you a real world example of what you just described that actually had happened within the last few weeks. So there's this thing called OpenDAO. Some of you may have heard of it. They released the SOS token. Basically what they did, so OpenSea, we all know OpenSea, it's the marketplace, most popular marketplace. It's centralized. OpenSea is a centralized marketplace funded by VCs. It's you know, it's completely an off-chain kind of thing. There is no DAO. It's managed like a traditional company. So when they started talking about going public, a lot of people in the crypto world got this thought, like, why are you going public? Why don't you release the token and distribute the token to the users and actually let the users have the benefit of, you know, make it public, but in the crypto world, not in the traditional world. And so somebody did this thing where they basically airdropped. Airdrop means they just put this new token into the wallet of the existing people. The airdrop, those tokens of this OpenDAO, the SOS tokens, into the wallets of the users who bought NFTs on OpenSea. And you should look at the article. So that thing kind of blew up. And within a couple of days, everybody went to claim their token. They were able to put a bunch of liquidity and kind of actual backing to the token. And there's a bunch of interesting DeFi instruments they used. But that's exactly the premise of OpenDAO, is we're going to distribute it to everybody who ever used OpenSea. And people who used it more, they're going to get more. People who used less, they're going to get less. But we're going to use this new community and the funds that people lock into this DAO to create basically a new OpenSea, but an actual better OpenSea. And that's kind of interesting. And that's, I think, is kind of exactly what you're describing. The benefit of this situation is that everybody who bought anything using OpenSea, it's all, you know, you can see it on chain. So it was super easy to kind of pull it off. And it became a big thing. And we'll see what happens there. But now that DAO has a big community and a good amount of treasury to go ahead and build an OpenSea competitor. And now they have, you know, you don't have to build a product and then try to find the users to use the product. You have a whole bunch of users now. You just need to build a product that satisfies those users. So it's kind of, the community can control how it's being built in.
I've seen this happen a lot recently with different projects within the space. A lot of people will start, like a lot of NFT projects, for example, will have like a podcast, and they'll have like, you know, like a Discord server. And before they ever have a website, before they even have smart contracts, before they have anything built, like they'll start with a community basically. And the founders, the guys who are writing the thing, or guys who are putting the thing together, will sort of start there, and they'll start getting interest, and they'll start, you know, bringing people onto the Discord. And then like almost everything else is secondary to that community, right? So like they have the Discord, they have the community, they have everything. Now they're building the tokens. Now they're building the components. Now they're launching the website. Now they're launching the website and getting it to interact with the backend Discord server so that folks can get what the website is putting out and that sort of thing. So there's definitely an interesting community first approach to a lot of these sort of projects where like to your point about like the DAO doesn't have to have the voting built in, you know, that's true. Like it doesn't, like it's just a design pattern, right? And you could choose how you design your DAO however you choose to design it. You don't have to necessarily implement it in the blockchain. But a lot of the reasons why you don't have that initially is because a lot of these projects start before the smart contract ever exists or before the token ever exists. And because this stuff is so hard to build and to build correctly the first time around, you see a lot of folks doing the drops. So they're working with the community, building all this stuff up in the background, and then they drop their stuff right then and there. And when they do their drop, that for NFT or for DAO or whatever, for their token, that's when everybody in the community gets behind it. And suddenly we start hearing about it because now they've gotten past a certain point. And so a lot of the things that we associate with DAOs, there just isn't the time or the energy or the effort necessarily to codify a lot of this stuff because they're coming at it from a community first perspective.
My thinking here is that DAO N equals one was the planet with all these currencies, and DAO N equals M or infinite is just the shrinking of those worlds into all these mini little planets called DAOs, where you now create your own rules and your own currency.
Yeah. In my head, I almost want to separate a few of the terminology has to be clearer here, because DAO, one thing DAO is, it's a community, and it's a community that does something together. Maybe it supports a project, maybe it's a service kind of guild community, maybe it's something, maybe it's a social thing like FWB. Then there's the DAO that is the kind of a codified set of rules and contracts that you put on chain, there almost like has to be a different terminology to that, because one can exist without the other in a way. And then there's the DAO that is the management approach, that it's all flat, there's no hierarchy, which I'm going to go back to the example of Olympus DAO. That's now, you know, it's the spirit of it, but it's not really how it runs. It's still, whether you want it or not, there's still going to be hierarchy. There's still going to be people who are going to become leaders. There's still going to be people who get some clout. Like so there's the community, there's the code side of it, and then there's the management side of it. And all that right now is called that one simple term, DAO, but they're all independent from each other. And I feel like there's got to be, you know, maybe over time it's going to be, you know, it's going to evolve and have different names, but right now it's kind of confusing.
Isn't the one thing that is special to a DAO and is the binding factor to the DAO the token?
And DAO can exist without a token.
If you look at the DAOs on the DAO House platform, which is the Red Guild is one of those, there's a bunch of others. I think there's a way to run it without your own token and instead use the DAI token. I think I may be wrong, but basically you're using a stable coin instead of your own token. I don't know how details, and I didn't research very much.
Yeah, you can build a DAO without a token associated to it, right? Like I said, and again, going back to design patterns, like the DAO is the voting and sort of decision-making piece of that design pattern. The token could be something completely different. Just like I can make a token, pre-mint a million, put it out in the world, and it does nothing. Like a DAO, associating a DAO to a token merely gives it additional features to what the DAO is capable of doing or what the DAO can do. And to Alex's point about how you have different DAOs doing completely different things in different ways, and we're all still calling it a DAO, I think in many of the same ways, like we have companies that function very differently from one another, right? Like you can have companies that automate everything. Everything is fully functional. Everything is easy, automatically done online. And you have companies that, you know, require some human to interact to with the company, to do things with the company and to you know, call customer support and that sort of thing. And I think all we're seeing here is the same kind of thing that we have in the corporate world sort of being implemented in the crypto space.
It's like the, you know, when I read the Raid Guild stuff yesterday, and I'm at the DAOhouse.club website right now, it just strikes me, it's almost like this stuff, DAOs to companies and organizations is what Snapchat is to Instagram and Facebook. Like people who use Facebook don't understand Snapchat, and the people who use Snapchat don't want the rest of the world to understand how even the UI works. Because I look at when I read Raid Guild, I just think to myself, is this English? Am I that behind that all these terms and things? Like, just listen to getting started on DAO House. Okay, so become an LP. I don't know, even is it like a limited partnership? Is that what that is? Provide liquidity on the house pool on Swapper.
So LP is a liquidity pool. You have to have a pool of liquidity
to
run your own token.
Second step, stake on Swapper. Stake your LP tokens to earn both DXD and WE as rewards. Great, I have no clue what that means. Clan. Oh, step three is clan.
So let's break this down a little bit easier, because I think Alex's point of pointing these out is a good thing to do, right? Like when we're talking staking, what we're really saying is like we're gonna basically take a certain amount of a token or of Ether or whatever it is that you're utilizing, and we're gonna lock it in and we're not gonna move it. Like that's staking basically. Staking is saying, hey, I'm not gonna sell my. I'm basically committing to this thing. I'm staking it. I'm staking it to the ground essentially. And I'm not going to sell it off. I can't sell it off in some instances, like the way that, depending on how you codify it. And so that's where you hear like terms like proof of stake, where you're basically staking to the thing, saying, I'm committed to this. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is for this, and I'm not going to move my money out. And that's, I think, what they mean by staking in this term.
Yeah, it's like an escrow.
Yeah.
That's not like a treasury, right? That's something else.
It can be. I mean, you can stake and get percentage back.
Everything can be everything.
Everything could be coded. Everything could be codable.
So Why don't you, let's walk through this. So we're at DAOHouse.club. DAOHouse is saying, hey, you should, our platform is to help you create your communities through DAOs. And it tells us, the very first thing it says is that House Token aligns all DAOs on the platform. I don't even know what that means. So as we create more value together, that value flows back to the House Token. So now I'm thinking, oh, who's behind the House Token? What Ponzi scheme is this?
Who owns the majority of that?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't like that off the bat. I'm like, no, I don't want to, what benefits do I get? You know, is it like a Better Business Bureau sticker on my store that says I have been approved and you can shop in my place with trust and with ease?
What's the difference between me hosting a WordPress site and me going on Shopify or going on another person's platform? The idea behind us utilizing a platform and a whole bunch of people utilize, there's benefits and there's negatives, right? Like the benefit is I don't have to codify a lot of this stuff myself. I don't have to figure a lot of this stuff out myself. I go with their platform. It simplifies the process for me. And I don't have to worry about a lot of things. In exchange, I also lose control over a lot of different things, right? And so the analogy here can be kind of used in the same way. You can go out and you can build your own DAO. You could build your own platform DAO. You can build your own D apps with all the component connections and everything. And that's going to take time, cost, and money. Or you can go with them, simplify the process a little bit, and start making money right away. I think the connection here is the same to like a Shopify versus like a hosting your own WooCommerce scenario.
I don't feel like I agree with that analogy, only because when I am choosing to use someone else's token, I am potentially adding value to a token that someone else could benefit from. Whereas if I'm just talking about hosting my site on WordPress or Shopify takes a little transaction fee. So I suppose for them, they get a little, and I might just say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to build my own. It's almost like a payment gateway process as comparison for me. But, you know, early on in the very early days, I guess people would say, well, is Shopify legit? Is it going to be around? Should I build my store on it? What if it doesn't exist 2 years from now? And how many other shopping platforms have tanked in the process of forcing stores to migrate to Shopify, right? So we're kind of in that world where these DAO ecosystems or these DAO platforms are trying to get you to come in and then trying to have you base off their token, which, again, it's in a trustless system. They're asking people to trust platforms, and it drives me nuts.
Same thing is happening on the NFT front for sure. You got NFT platforms that are trying to get folks to jump on board and get their stuff situated and launch in their drops and all this other stuff. And it's just consolidation. Nature pours a vacuum. And so where there is a vacuum in the space, people are going to try to fill it.
And that's being filled by a lot of shady characters, I can tell you. Like something Etienne said earlier, you know, is there a Better Business Bureau sticker? And I know I mistook using MetaMask to like log in kind of securely to a website. For some reason, I thought that was safe. No, I'm logging in with MetaMask. And then I went to go stake something. And I did. I will never pull that ETH out again. You know? So it was a scam, right? And I thought about it. It was like, okay. So what if that's an opening? Somebody can come in and say, yes, this has a stamp of approval. And then we're centralized again. So it's kind of this, it all loops back to becoming centralized. I can't see how this successfully doesn't get centralized again in the future.
Ken, just to jump in, this reminds me sort of the diamond rush that happened in the 1800s to South Africa, where diamonds were discovered and people were being canvassed to go and work in the mines because they could all become very rich. And who did that message appeal to? Wasn't to rich elite Europeans. It was to people who were on the downs and on the outs and on their last legs. And they ended up all going to South Africa with the hopes of striking it rich or at least just living a decent life. What they ended up doing was they became laborers inside of mines that became multi-bazillion dollar empires for two or three families, right? And I mean, it's that's what all of this reminds me of, is everybody who is now drawing little thingies on pieces of toilet paper and taking a photo of it. Now it's an NFT because hopefully that creates some sort of thing for me. But now you have what's happening with OpenSea. Now everyone's sort of gunning for OpenSea. OpenSea is all of a sudden becoming the man, right? And everyone's now upset with OpenSea because of the valuation so high. It's so successful. And now the next platform's going to come and try and destroy that. So, man, we are in the white water while everyone else is having picnics on beautiful green lakes and having toasted sandwiches. And we're all in the white water being pummeled in the waves.
Yeah, but what a ride.
But isn't this kind of like the Friendster to MySpace to Facebook of the early Web 2 days? There's folks just trying to figure out what is going to be the interaction and the value provide that gets people to stick to them and allows them to grow to build that like kind of unassailable position. And I think everybody, there's so much money flowing in right now that of course you're going to get the charlatans that come in and try to scam folks, but there's also going to be some really long enduring value that comes out of it. But it's just going to be 98% of what we're seeing now is going to be failed. And there's a 1 or 2% that are going to be the foundations for what the next evolution of this whole market looks like. And it's hard for any of us. I mean, if we knew what that was going to be, we'd all be there and everyone, you know, we'd all be rich, but we're still trying to figure it out. It's still trying to shake out. There's all of this experimentation and variation and imitation that are happening. And it's going to take a while for us to get there. But it does seem a little, like you said, like we're in the white water, but it's also kind of exciting and interesting to see how all of this shakes out. And, you know, Michael said he left his job to get deep into this world, and he's committed to seeing all this through. And, you know, some others of us are sitting on the sideline watching pretty intently, seeing how it's going to shake out and like kind of dipping a toe in here and there. And there are other folks who are just like, call me when it's over.
Yeah, you guys figure it out.
I think there's a lot of parallels between what Etienne was describing about the diamond mines and the San Francisco gold rush, right? Many people traveling from the East Coast to the West Coast for the gold rush, you know, like tried to make it big and tried to make their gold. But who actually made money during the San Francisco gold rush? It was the people providing the pickaxes, the people providing the tools, the equipment, the housing, the brothels, the food, all of those things were the people that actually made real significant money in the San Francisco gold rush. And it's no different with any gold rush in this instance. A lot of people are going to get into this market. Very few people are going to make significant amounts of money. Maybe they might make a good living, but it's the people providing the tools, building the tools. Those are the people that you're going to see succeed significantly in this space.
I was about to say something very, very similar, like the whole diamond rush and then the San Francisco gold rush. And, you know, when I was in grade school in Alaska, we were taught Alaska history, the Alaska gold rush, or the Klondike gold rush. And I don't remember if it was Chilkoot Pass or whatever the place was where they had to go up this mountain pass. And they would climb up there and climb up there. And one guy went with a big old grinding stone on his back. Because once you got in that mountain pass, once you got past it, mining the gold, the people who made the money were the people providing the services to the miner, like you're saying. And the guy who brought that grinding stone to sharpen all their tools, yeah, just a pinch of gold. You got plenty and he got rich. Maybe there's a parallel. What tools could we build? And that's partly why I'm exploring all the different things.
Yeah, OpenSea is, like we just talked about OpenSea, but it's one of those tools. Everybody wants to mint some NFTs and sell and buy OpenSea. Here's your, you know, toolkit. But I think it's going to be similar to creator economy. Like creator economy, the last 3 years have gotten so much tooling, so much everything from no code, you know, website building, all kind of things to launch your, you know, educational course on. Like there's so many tools for every every kind and every little sub-industry of creator economy. And it's great. I mean, I think it's great. I think everybody who wants to do something now in creator economy can abstract away from the complexities of the, you know, dealing with code and some, you know, other things and actually focus on what they like the most. I mean, Web3 and crypto world in general also needs to build levels of abstraction. Of course, you know, without losing the decentralization somehow, but building levels of abstraction is going to help bring more smart, motivated people in who wants to do something now, solve a problem using the tools that are available in the crypto space, which right now might be just a little too, like, just like Etienne was reading through this, you know, couple of bullet points, you know, each 99.9% of people reading so it's like, no, I'm like, this doesn't make sense. But like 3-5 years from now, I bet you would have to think about those things when they launch DAO, when it's hopefully still has the Web3 ethos of decentralization and, you know, no monopolies, but still, you know, gives you the tooling to achieve your goals without having to worry about certain technicalities. I wonder if that's where we're going to get to. But that's where the market demand for all kinds of tooling comes in. Like, I think there's a lot of demand for to simplify a lot of those concepts into something that is easier to deal with.
Hey, this is Etienne. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're having as much fun as I am wrestling through these concepts and these ideas. If you love this, please give us a rating, leave us a review. Head to 7ctos.com/podcast and we'll see you soon.